Hello, everyone.
Hi, Lindy.
Hi, everyone.
Hi, Lindy.
Hi.
Hello, hello, hello.
Good morning.
Hi, Karen.
What? Say again.
Hi, Carrie.
Hello. Hello, Nick. Hi, Gartry. Hello. I'm running late. I've got to sort myself out. Tech issues. Puppy issues. No longer Peter, that's a good thing. All right. Everyone can see me. Okay, done. What's my camera like? I've got a new camera.
Lovely.
Oh, good. Oh, good. What's my hair like?
Gorgeous.
Gorgeous. Lovely. Hi, Lindy. Hello. I've got water. I've got everything. Hi, Clive. Good to see you. I wonder if Peter's in the wrong room. Oh gosh, I can see the puppet. A bit late now. What's my sound like? So I'm using the new mic. Is it all right?
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah,
great. I can hear.
Very good.
That's what I wanted. Oh, now that.
Hi, Barbara.
Just going to put myself on mute for 1 second and then I'll go and find Peter. Bear with me. Just got to stop the puppy from eating my jacket.
Oh.
What breed of puppy have you got?
It's so cute, the puppy's on the bed.
I don't know, he's not mine. Are you? Do you want to see him?
Yeah, definitely. Oh. Are you babysitting?
Yeah.
Oh, what a cutie.
Oh, cute.
Oh.
Looks like he's definitely a cross.
Oh, he was he's wild. Abandoned.
Yeah.
Which you get a lot, obviously, here in Thailand. But
no
one could leave you alone, could they? Could leave you alone.
Are you going to try and keep him?
Oh, he's not mine. No, I'm dog sitting while my friend's away.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
will you give him back, though?
Yes. I don't have children for a reason. Okay, right. I'm tempted to go and see if Peter's in another room. Oh, wait, 704. Admin, yes, love.
Yeah,
yes,
Carrie, I've just had an email from Peter saying that he got locked out. So I've just sent him the invite again to a different
Wonderful.
Email address. Hopefully he'll be joining us any moment now.
Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Carrie, could yes. you clarify for me, I reread the email that I got
yep.
a couple times. I read the blog. Is this the public Q&A? I haven't subscribed.
Yes.
And then there is another one following this.
So after today's open Q&A, which you are currently on, we
okay.
have the workshop, which is for the magical membership students. So if you are a member
okay.
of that, then you're welcome to join us. I'm going to explain all of this in a moment anyway. And then tomorrow
okay.
we have another Q&A, which is just for students.
Any students or just the membership students? Because
any students.
Okay, because I'm currently enrolled in three of the fairy and the dragon and the courses. So
then you are welcome to join us tomorrow for the student Q&A.
Okay.
Yeah. So Lindy, what you'll need to do to access that is if you go into any of your courses like fairy magic or whatever, and then in one of the top section, like the introductory section, there'll be one that says join the magic students Q&A. If you go into that, and then you need to complete a little form, an about you form, and then when that's done, then there's a link, a discount link to join the questions and answer course.
Okay.
The magic students questions and answer course, and in that there's the link for the Zoom calls, and then and that's all the recordings in there as well. But if you can't manage, then if you email azizshamanism@gmail.com, then I can send you the link.
Okay, thank you so much.
Is
this one the same as Sundays?
No, on Saturday we have the public Q&A, so anybody can join, and it's normally at 10 o'clock on a first Saturday of the month. And then on Sunday we have the magic students Q&A, and this is for anybody who's bought one of Peter's courses.
What I'm saying is I am one of those people, so do I need to do this one and tomorrow's? Will different. It be the same?
No, they are different calls. I mean, in this weekend, what Peter tends to do is, you know, he talks more generally on the Saturday, and then he goes into further depth quite often on the same subject on the Sunday. So that's what Peter's going to do on tomorrow. He's going to go more in depth on the power of choice.
Okay, so I could just come in to tomorrow's call.
I find that both calls are really, really good. There's not really a difference in, well, I mean, it's that they're different, but they're both really worth coming to, I find. Yeah. But it's, you know, it's up to you. And then the workshops, which we normally do at 11:30 on the first Saturday of the month, that's part of the magical membership. And this is actually a membership, which is $35 a month. And then there's like a 2-hour workshop on different subjects, all kind of practical magic. And then there's a possibility that you can get, Peter can coach you during that session.
I've got that, and I'll be in on the 2 o'clock meeting. Yeah.
So today we're doing it later, so that because we have got a few people in the US who have to get up at an ungodly time. So we said, okay, well, every 3 months, we'll do it at a more US friendly time. So that's why I'm doing it later today.
Depends what time you get up. It's ungodly or not.
It's a bit of a challenge. We've got Thailand and Europe and the US trying to kind of harmonize.
I want to know who DPI is all the time. Who's DPI? Keep signing into DPI. I don't know who it is.
Hey, who's that?
You.
Oh, that's probably my microphone or something.
Yeah. Well, Peter, you sound wonderful.
There's a picture of me there, so.
You sound wonderful.
Yeah, it's working.
Yay! Good.
Sitting in the right place.
All right. So just finally, before we get going, let's just quickly answer Pia's question. She says, when will the monthly point holding workshop start? So Pia, at the moment, there wasn't enough uptake on those. However, we are starting Ultimate Healing again this month or next month. So we anticipate that once we start off with the Ultimate Healing, that the point holding sessions will take place because the momentum will be there. So that's hopefully what's going to happen. So bear with us. And then as soon as there is the desire, as soon as there is the motivation, then we will get going with point holding. All right, put puppy down. Let's start. So welcome, everyone. Peter, are you all right? You ready? Is he there? Oh, he's doing something. Okay. All right, everyone. So if we could please make sure that everybody is on mute, that would be really helpful. Thank you very much. Of course, you're welcome to have your cameras on, cameras off, however you choose. It's entirely up to you. So today we are talking about, or Peter is talking about, the power of choice. But before we get into that, just a couple of announcements that I would like to share with you. So as we were just explaining, But for the purpose of the recording, those people who are on our monthly magical membership, we do have Magically Healing Trauma workshop after today's Q&A. So if you would like to join us on the Magically Healing Trauma workshop, then the link is going to be put in the chat right now. And so if you are not a member of our monthly membership, then you can still join us. Link is coming. Peter, can you just give one line to explain to everybody what the workshop is about?
It's basically about healing trauma. You see, trauma isn't just stored at the mental level, so psychology doesn't actively deal with it. It's stored in the body, the emotional body, in the energetic body. It creates all kinds of damage, which can lead to kind of dysfunctional behavior. And there are not sufficient solutions for it in psychology. By working with the wounds, we're going to actually look at actually different ways trauma is stored and actually release it. And there's a lot in there, it's hard to explain right now, but you'll find many ways of healing the different aspects of trauma and clear it completely to restore your confidence, your self-worth, and your general joy for life.
Great, thank you very much. So again, if anyone would like to join us, you still do have the opportunity to do so. Link is in the chat. Yep, I'm totally excited about that as well. Other things
to say, sorry, Carrie, just to say, if anyone does join,
yep.
then when you'll get access to the monthly membership. It is also possible to buy the trauma workshop as a one-off, but it's more expensive doing it that way. There'll be a link on the another link on that page to do it as a one-off, and I can put that link in the chat. But if you join the monthly membership, you'll need to then enroll free in the course, which is just the trauma workshop. And then it's also important to find the Zoom link, which should be pretty obvious, to pre-register for the Zoom call, because it's going to be done on Zoom. So you'll need to do those two things if you join the membership: enroll in the trauma workshop with a free link, and then register on the Zoom call. Yeah, okay, that's it.
Thank you very much. And just to let you know that we have organized the next few months' magical monthly membership topic. So today we are doing Magically Healing Trauma. Next month we've got Choosing to Be a Winner. We've then got Power, Coming to Terms with It. I'm definitely looking forward to that one. And then we've got Working with Dreams. So information about those workshops are available on the website and on our online school. So if you want to have a look at those, you are welcome. And also to let you know that, as I've just mentioned, we will be launching Ultimate Healing again for 2022. And we've got this month, we've got our promotional webinars coming up on the 22nd of January, which will be friendly to the UK time zone, and on the 25th of January, which will be friendly to the US time zone. And in this promotional webinar, Peter is going to talk about the 8 aspects of healing and also giving a radionics program. Peter, do you just want to talk briefly about that?
Basically, it's going to be to release people from all the toxins from shedding, the nanotechnology, the spike proteins, all things you might be picking up in the world today. This will clear the whole system of it, so you'll be free of that.
So if you yourself have not yet done Ultimate Healing and would like to join us, then you're welcome to join us. It's a fully online course, and Peter will be guiding some webinars along the way. You've got the full manual, you'll have the attunements, etc., the Chandali attunements, more information to come as we go through that. But you are welcome to join us if you haven't done, but also if you have completed Ultimate Healing, you're still welcome to join us on those promotional webinars for everything that Peter has just said. But you're also welcome to join us on the course as well. So even if you've done it before, you know what it's like. Doing it again is going to be just as powerful, if not more, enhancing everything that you've already learned. So if you want to come on that journey with us one more time, then you're more than welcome. Links are going to go in the chat now so that you can get information about the promotional webinars, about the course itself. At the moment, the full price, the course is $497. But as part of this promotion, the course price is going to be $397. As part of those webinars. If you are an existing student, then you're welcome to join us just for $160. That's an existing student of the online Ultimate Healing course. Then you're welcome to join us again for the $160. If you are a past student of in-person point holding, then again, you're welcome to join us at a greatly reduced price. I've forgotten how much that is. Siddhika, please put that in the chat. I can't remember. I can't remember what it is. But the thing is, if you do come and join us on the webinars, on the promotional webinars, then you get the discount coupon. Then I think we're putting it in the chat now anyway. But let your friends know. So if you have completed the Ultimate Healing course before, do let them know that these promotional webinars are coming up, because they do get the opportunity to get the discount. They do get the attunements, and they do get some other offers if people are to purchase within those time frames. So let them know. And of course, you're welcome to join us as well. That really is everything from me now. So I'm going to hand over to Peter. So thank you very much, everyone, for your patience while I gave you those announcements. And I will be filtering questions as always. So please make sure that you let us know what questions you have, what you're thinking, what you're feeling in the chat, and I'll speak to you then.
Okay, so over to me. Might be spotlighted here. So, talking about choice, I hope you've read my little article in it. So I'm going to go more today into some of the complications of the choice and the kind of choices you might not be aware of. You see, choices tend to have consequences. As a simple example, you wouldn't choose to be in the higher tax bracket, but if you want to, if you choose to be have a higher pay, you're going to be in a higher tax bracket. So you can see that one choice can have consequences elsewhere. Some of the choices I want to look at then are the common ones we have, which we didn't really want to make. Example, we'll be talking later in one of these workshops about choosing to be a winner. Now, nobody really chooses to be a loser, but there are certain choices that lead to that. So we want to go into them, what those choices are, because obviously the main things which determine whether you're going to be a winner or a loser are really interesting, because you've got two like sets in a way. You can only be one and the other. If you make one of the choices, you tend to be falling into the others. As a simple example, a winner is willing to feel their emotions, a loser isn't. If you made the choice to shut up your feelings, that's going to put you in the loser category. A winner learns from his mistakes and is from his successes and failures to grow stronger. A loser gives up after a mistake and a failure. So this is two of the examples. So for instance, if you've chosen to give up, you've chosen not to feel, these things are putting you into that bracket of being a loser. So you're not going to have to actually look at every single choice in that. So once you recognize those, you actually make the profound choice of being a winner, you're going to change all that. So in my article, I wrote a little bit about how we can go into that unconscious, into the subconscious, into the forbidden zone and find your old choices. So I'm giving you some more ideas of how you can actually work with that. So for instance, if you're working with, let's put myself in a higher spot for a minute. So if for instance, you're going to be find this old choice of not feeling, you may find, okay, many of the other choices of being a winner are not there either. Learning from mistakes, growing stronger, being willing to actually do things to gain more success. So another example here is that, for instance, if you give a winner a new tool, they want to use it. If it's a loser, I think, oh no, I've got more to do. You see the different attitude here. Once you're in that energy, not wanting to feel, you're not wanting to actually face life, not wanting to actually learn and grow and keep trying, that's all gone. That's where the loser really is. They've stopped moving forward. When you really look at life, for instance, in nature, everything keeps going, doesn't give up. You cut a hedge, it keeps growing. No matter how many times you cut it, it doesn't give up off growing after one cutting. Same with the plants, you cut your lawn, you know, the dandelions tend to grow lower to actually adapt and so on. They keep going, adapting. They don't know how to give up. There's no sense of this is nothing, I'm giving up. This is a strange human choice that nothing else has. But it's held in place by these minor choices, you see. The choice not to feel because it's got too painful. The choice not to go again because it's going to hurt again. All those things is usually about avoiding pain. And what's really holding this together is that the avoidance of pain isn't really our strongest choice. It's the seeking of pleasure. You may find, for instance, that's those who are seeking pleasure and seeking something really good, willing to go through pain to get there. If you don't have that goal, then pain is something you feel all the time. And your life becomes one avoiding pain rather than seeking the growth and pleasure and all the joy that comes with it. See, when that goal is there, the focus isn't on the pain, therefore you don't have the choice of going against it. Of course we don't want pain, but that shouldn't become the motivating choice. If you come back to real dreams, this is what comes back to again, what do you really want? Quite often when you're avoiding pain, you forget those dreams. You're too busy fighting against something that you forget to go for the joys as well. So this is the first choice one has to look at. whether your life is based on avoiding pain or seeking joy. This is a profound choice. By profound choice, it means one which colours all the other choices you make. You see, I mentioned in the blog about the dimensions of choice. They're the one-dimensional choices which define the point, the two-dimensional choices which define the area, and the three-dimensional choices which have depth. They give purpose to the whole thing and therefore colour every other choice you make. Like, for instance, if you made that choice to actually be a loser, then everything you do, you know, you're failing. Although you didn't make that choice, it's like you're led into it by the other choices. If you've made this choice to that life is about avoiding pain rather than seeking pleasure, that leads you into that category simply because you're always fighting the pain, avoiding things. You've forgotten how to seek the joy. In a way, they're both going the same way in the end, but it changes your whole focus. So obviously, you want the joy, not the pain. But it depends where you put your focus. And these profound choices are very determining what your life's all about. A life of seeking joy is not the same as a life of avoiding pain. Although that will come into it somewhere because you don't want pain, obviously. It doesn't agree with the joy. However, there's a certain amount you will go through along the way, and it doesn't matter because it passes. We've all been hurt. You know, do you ever know anybody who's never been hurt? It doesn't exist. If some people think their pain is, it makes them the most important person in the world, everybody has to look at their pain and have sympathy towards them and have compassion for them and all those things. And actually, everybody has pain. And of course, as soon as you learn to actually feel that and go through it and release it, it's gone. You can go to the next thing. It doesn't hold you back. But when you start into this trap of avoiding pain, you get caught in this all these other negatives because you don't want to feel, you don't want to try again because you don't want to get hurt again. You don't want to, therefore you don't want to learn new skills because effort is involved. You haven't, you've forgotten how to go for the drive, which actually gives you that joy. So the fundamental choice you make first is that your life's about joy, or rather seeking joy rather than avoiding pain. These profound choices colour everything else you make. So once I've made that choice, then everything else I do has a different focus. I might do the same thing, but with a different energy behind it. Like even when I'm doing my work to actually gain money, rather than actually thinking I've got to have enough money not to starve and avoid all the bills and avoid everything else that's coming and avoid, the repossession of the house and all the other things you worry about. No, you think of the wonderful things you're going to do with that money. Then it becomes a joy. You have more motivation, more enthusiasm in what you're doing. And this is another big one people look at when they want money. What do you want it for? People are often so caught up in actually needing it rather than wanting it for their goals because they have to avoid, all the problems that come with not having enough money because, the wolf's at the door, you've got the tax man offering your money, all the bills to pay and so on, and people have worry. Therefore, it becomes enough to actually have enough money not to have those worries. That doesn't make room for your real dreams. If you're only here to actually pay your bills, you haven't got dreams. When you're seeking joy, it's a whole different thing. So the first fundamental choice you have to make is this is what life's going to be about, seeking joy rather than avoiding pain. Then you make the choice that you're willing to feel. Make the choice that you're willing to learn from your successes and failures and grow stronger. So that's the most common examples of the profound choices. When you really go into it, your three-dimensional choices is the underlying things that gives your life meaning, what you've come here to do, what really drives you. And these often form quite early in life. And you can look at signs of them by how your life is going. Best way to look at a choice is a little bit about beliefs. You can see your beliefs by looking at this yourself from the outside and thinking, what kind of beliefs will be creating this life? But actually, choice comes before belief. You see, you have a certain amount of choice in the beliefs you're going to form. Belief's not automatic. Belief is formed when you give meaning significance to an event. The event itself doesn't cause a belief. If you have a choice in how you're viewing that belief. So the initial choice is actually affecting the beliefs you form later. So if you make this initial choice, for instance, you go back and remember when you chose to avoid pain, when you're being hurt, and if you go back and actually see how deep that went, it's become a profound choice because it's affecting your whole life. There's so much pain there that you want to keep avoiding it. If you go into that feeling, that oppression at the time, in order to make this new choice, that life's about seeking joy. It might be something you forgot at that time. And simply making that choice changes everything around. And as I mentioned in the article, choice supersedes itself. You make a new choice in the same depth of emotion, the other choice is gone, you've changed. Your higher self is involves your unconscious is open. You change on a deep and profound level, and your life changes. So you first go into the old pain, but you can do this journey through the subconscious into the forbidden zone. Remember that pain when you were hurt and choose to avoid pain. When you change it around to actually seek joy, you come out completely different. From that moment, your life is about seeking joy. Therefore, your work you do to gain money, everything else you do has a vision behind it. Where you're going, there's an enthusiasm about things you're going to gain in life. This is where it has to start. These are the most important choices. So two-dimensional choices, these are also important, as well as the one-dimensional choices. They have to back each other up. If you had so many people making two-dimensional choices to having a one-dimensional choice altogether, I could see a person deciding to get up and start going to the gym and everything simply because they're not happy with having to sit around doing nothing. They think they have a guilt about it. They doesn't feel good. So to choose something else. They haven't chosen, first of all, to be healthy or fit or to have more energy or whatever it is behind that makes them want to do it. Therefore, it doesn't last. You make these two-dimensional choices without a one-dimensional choice, you soon run out of a purpose. There's nothing to hold it together. Like, why did you choose to eat differently if you haven't first chosen to be healthy? If you are making that first choice to be healthy, then you need to make the two-dimensional choices that support it, whether it's to exercise, to eat better, to rest, meditate, all those things, deal with your emotions, you know. If there's a choice to be healthy, then they have purpose. So you see, without making choices in different dimensions, they won't stick. And so what makes it easy to maintain the drive is to go to that deep choice, the three-dimensional choice, the profound choice that colors every other choice you make. So other choices, which can be negative in this case, which also can be profound, is when you, as a child, you're not getting what you wanted and you choose to settle for less. That's a profound choice because it means everything else you do, you might have some success, but it's always less than you could have. So you have to go back to that one. Remember when you chose to settle for less, what choice could you make instead? Remember, the reason you made that choice was you had to try and deal with the pain at the time. You're not getting what you want. It could be to seek elsewhere, rather than actually settle for less. Just choose to be patient and create much success more gradually and find other avenues. You can't suddenly choose to have more money, for instance, or to have more, whatever it is your parents didn't give you, or that sweets, or whatever it was, to have all the things you wanted. It's a hard choice to make at that time because you haven't got control yet. But you can choose how you're going to respond. If you choose to be patient and work on your goals gradually and not give up, that's a much more positive choice. That's more about being a winner again. You learn, you grow stronger, and you get there. So these are some simple examples of how those choices can work, the choices you might find in there when you start looking. They're always obvious. It says you don't choose to be a loser. You don't choose to not have, well, some people do choose not to have love. They've been hurt and they said, I don't have love again. No, never again is like a long time. That becomes a profound choice. They can go through life getting everything else, but never their love. But there are other choices you're not aware of making because they're a consequence of other choices. Like when you choose not to feel, when you choose to give up, when you choose not to try. These are then colouring the other choices. You stop trying in many areas of your life. And why do people not try? Because often the enthusiasm in there, as I said, it goes back to that fundamental choice you have to make in the beginning, that life is going to be about seeking joy rather than avoiding pain. See, when you keep seeking, then you keep trying because you've got a goal. Avoidance is no real goal. It's going away from something rather than going towards something. It doesn't give you that motivation. It doesn't give you a vision of a future. Yes, you can think of a future without pain, but what does it look like? What are the other details in there that makes it happy? It's not enough to not have something. You have to focus on what you actually want, which is why the avoidance choices don't really get you anywhere. So those are the kind of things you look for when you go into that forbidden zone. The feeling comes up and remember choices like giving up, not feeling, not trying. These are all choices that don't have a future that you can picture, that don't have a motivation. You simply switch around to choose to seek joy, to keep trying, to learn more, whatever it is, to gain whatever skills you need to get there. These are the positive choices. Like another example, you might have given up on something because you don't see a way of getting there. The first choice is to learn the skills you need. This is where you go to school and into college and things. You learn certain skills because you want a certain future in the end of it. And quite often as a child, we don't know those choices yet. You have to go to school because you have to. But at each point, you're choosing your topics and you think of what your future is and what therefore qualifications you're going to need, and you have a goal. So you do need a future to make the right choices. That's a thing. And the first thing is to see a future of joy. What's the future of survival? We have to struggle, see how much to make your living somehow. Now, what's going to give you joy? Sometimes people don't know what they want because of that early choice, you see. I have so many people saying, well, what's my purpose? What do I do? I can't tell you your purpose. You have to feel it. If I tell you, and it's not coming from the emotion, you don't feel the drive. When you go back to that seeking of joy, then suddenly you start having dreams again. You find to your direction because you want something. You start having desire. You start salivating over it. You know, you want to go there. You see a future that you really want, and you stop having some hope that you can actually create that. These things come back when you make those right choices. It's quite often those early choices that have create these blockages. That's why people don't have the right vision. They don't know what to go for, or they don't have the enthusiasm to actually get out and create it. So if you're wondering what these blocks are, start with choice. The ones I've mentioned actually apply to so many people, it's worth looking at those first. That fundamental choice to seek joy rather than to avoid pain. Okay, any questions so far?
Yes, we do. So please let me go to the pre-submitted question that we had today. So when creating the life that we want and seeing success, what happens when outside influences come in unexpectedly and throw us off course? And if we try to welcome those emotions and it leads to further aggravation, what do we do then?
That's a very good question. Very common one, actually, because there are layers to every creation. The fact is, everything comes up is what we call the secondary. It is part of your creation, part of all the beliefs and emotions got stored around this same issue. It's never one issue. You focus on what you want, and all the blockages come up one after the other. You keep welcoming them layer by layer. When you welcome one, the next one comes up. This is how we do it. You see, when you actually work towards a goal, the reason you haven't got it is because it's putting many traumas behind this. Therefore, many layers of experience and emotion that's still holding you back. You know, it's not just one. There'll be one layer. You release one, another one comes up. And these manifest around you as well. Everything that happens is a manifestation of those thought patterns. As soon as you activate that thought of what you want, those secondaries emerge. Why? Because we are in a constant of creation. When you start creating, it causes other old creations to reassert themselves. And that's what these negatives really are, old creations. So you say, I want to create my success. And all these old thoughts come out of failing and giving up, whatever that was before, they all surface. You welcome them, go with the emotion and move on until you're simply left with that success. When there's no more secondaries, that's when it's going to manifest. So therefore, always be willing to go through the secondaries when you start in your manifestation process. Don't expect it to be instant. Be ready to go through layers. If they come up, that's great because you're killing something. There'll be past memories, basically, which could hold certain beliefs that are in your way. When you welcome those old feelings and then they pass, they're gone. Until you're left with just the success you're creating, then it happens. So keep going through it layer by layer. Whatever comes up, welcome it until it passes. If something else comes up, that's okay. Welcome that too. Eventually, you'll just be left with a success.
And a question from me, if the secondaries that arise are very, very intense, is there anything that you can do to, other than the dragon discreation spell, is there anything else that you can do or use to either help you get through it quicker or to just dampen the impact of the secondary?
That's why we're doing the next workshop, Magic Healing Trauma.
Oh,
in the meantime, it is really about, well, the first step though is to actually be the observer. Don't get too involved or identified with the emotion. It's intense, but it's okay. It's going to be part of the release. If there's a big trauma in there, it's going to be an intense emotion. If you first put yourself in a position as an observer, you actually welcome it, realize, no, this pain isn't me. It's a feeling, and it's okay to feel. That's the first attitude you've got to get. The observer, anything you feel is okay to feel. If you're not fighting and resisting it, you find it starts getting easier to help, to welcome. Whatever it is, it's just a feeling, it's okay. When you stop judging feelings, it's not a problem anymore. It's the judgment and the identification that makes it difficult. So that's the first thing, is to set this attitude. There's no judgment in emotion, and the emotion isn't you. You're observing it, you're feeling it, but it isn't you. I'm one who's having the emotion. I'm not the emotion. If I'm angry, I'm feeling angry. I'm not an angry person. See how we identify with things? Sometimes I'm an angry person. It's come to an entity. No, it's not me. I can be angry now. I can be sad there. I can be happy there. All different emotions make no difference to who I am. I'm just feeling something. So first take away the judgment and realize I can feel anything. The emotion isn't me, so it's just something I'm feeling. It's okay. Just be ready for that. So an intense emotion comes up, you really welcome intense emotion. It'll pass. That's the other thing to remember, this too shall pass.
if the emotions are so intense that they can sometimes stop action, they can stop you moving forward.
At the time, but you stop and feel it. You don't need to move at that moment. So when you go through the process of releasing emotions, you're not trying to do something else. You stay with the emotion till it's passed, then you can go back to action. You often haven't got the energy of both. When you're dealing with the emotion, you sit there and deal with it.
Thank you very much.
And then go. Don't use the runes as well. We'll talk about that later.
Yes. Do excuse me, the puppy is eating my skull, Crystal. Okay, it's another question. If I have experienced something so emotionally terrible, how can I get back into such deep emotion on my own? Great question. And how do I get into such a state? I can't get that deep to make a new decision with a new intensity.
There are layers. Remember, we suppress emotions layer by layer. Often the first thing you feel is unconsciousness because you numbed it out. So the first thing you're going to feel is numbness. Don't try and get to the next emotion. You feel that numbness until that goes. So what happens is that you'll try and feel something. Well, don't try and feel it. Welcome what you're feeling. You know there's an emotion in there, but you can't reach it. Well, okay, there's a certain frustration there. Before you felt this before too. Do you welcome the numbness? You welcome the frustration? You welcome the apathy? You go through layers before you actually get to the final big emotion that's at the bottom of it because it's been suppressed in layers. Remember, you have to feel every bit. You work through a scale. Numbness, apathy, grief, fear, anger, pain. Then you get to the enthusiasm.
How do we encourage our partners to do this process?
Well, it's always best when you've done it yourself first because then you're flowing with it. It's hard to tell somebody something you haven't experienced. But if you're doing it, it's working. It's so much easier to be positive, enthusiastic, and explain to somebody else so they actually pick up that positive energy. And remember, appreciation is what changes people. See, a person needs a certain motivation to change. People don't change without motivation. They've got to want to get better. Now, if they can actually get people sympathy all the time, we're talking about problems, they don't be the one that can actually change them. They want sympathy. So first thing is don't give sympathy. You appreciate. It means you don't have to say anything. You simply hold the attitude of appreciation where you're realizing they're a god. They created this beautifully. There's no judgment in that, but there's this kind of feeling of connecting to their god. Where they'll begin to feel themselves then they are creating this and they can change it. They can then begin to realize this responsibility. They can change it. That's what's going to shift it for them. And sometimes it takes time. Best thing is to keep the appreciation there as long as you need until they change. Don't get frustrated. Don't argue with them. Don't shout at them to tell them to do it. Just keep the appreciation. And if you get frustrated, welcome that. That's your process too.
And when do we make the new choice? How do we know we are far enough into the old creation to make the new choice?
Because you remember when you first made it. That's what happens. The original choice is made in a state of emotion. When you really go into the emotion, you remember why you made a choice. Before we actually remember the choice, you remember a need to make a choice. It's almost a survival need. I've got to make a choice or something, or I'm going to go mad, something like that. In the emotion, you feel a need to make a choice. That's when you're ready. Because you remember the choice that you made to that emotion.
So if anyone has any other choice-related questions, please do put them in the chat now. In the meantime, I will go to the unrelated questions that we have. When problems and issues come from multidimensional self into our reality here and now, how do you solve those problems or attacks and diseases from those realms in the here and now?
It's all the same because we are multidimensional. When we created all this, we weren't in this limited form. We actually were God when we created everything. Therefore, our real self is multidimensional. So it doesn't, that simply becomes part of the process in welcoming things. You actually move through the layers as you start welcoming, more and more into that reality the way you're creating it. There's always a point before you discreate, where you got to this point, we go right to the emotions, and you realize, this isn't me, this is my creation. At that moment, you're multidimensional because you're God. You recognize, I created this. And you have to simply let it go, and it discreates. That's being God. You're multidimensional. There's no difference. You should be aware of being multidimensional all the time. That's more real.
Next question. I love this. Like a rubber band stretching, I feel the emotions and then sometimes it pings back and disappears. How can I maintain the emotion long enough to expand into it?
You welcome the next emotion. How do you feel about it pinging back? There's another kind of frustration here. You're after something and it goes. This happens in therapy as well, and it probably has a reflection in other areas of your life. What you're going for, you can't get. How does that feel? Quite often you're chasing one emotion, and actually there's other emotions that are trying to show it themselves. So remember, don't try and stick with anything. Welcome whatever's there. If the emotion pings back like a rubber band, what's the next feeling? How do you feel about that? Do you feel disappointed? Do you feel you're failing? Welcome that. See where that leads you. As you go through each layer, you'll get to another one. You only get there by going through all the layers, not by trying to jump them.
So something wonderful has happened to Lulu. She said that her friend had asked her for help, but she didn't know where to start. So, Peter, she mentally asked you for advice. And then 15 to 20 minutes later, she received your advice with an action plan, mm-hmm. crystal clear and very practical. She would like to know, was it really you? Or was it our tribe's egregore? Was it her? Was it all of the above? Please explain.
It's a mixture. Well, first of all, remember with the Chandali, but if we get level 4 Bedroom Master, anybody who asks you for help, even from a distance, will get help. You've got a whole team with you. Your higher self is there, you know. If I'm not constantly replying, my higher self will be replying. You can get to that. This happens with every Vajra Master. That's when you get to Chandali level 4. If you've got Chandali level 4, people can ask you in the same way, you'll get an answer. It'll be your higher self that's answering, because you've made a good connection with your higher self begins to manifest. Just handy, so I don't have to do anything. I let my higher self do it. You know, you can ask me anything you like. One day I'll be sitting here going to sleep and my higher self was walking there.
I've had many a conversation with your higher self. Mainly during point holding sessions. Wonderful. Feel the emotions of others, of lovers, close friends, family. How to deal with that? I cannot make the choice for them to choose for joy.
Actually, you can. Remember, you can grok people. The process of grokking, we've talked with them on part somewhere in the course. You start by practicing with objects. Like, if you want to become this table, I become the table. I feel myself as square. I can feel the legs. I can feel my weight on it. Where the air moves around me, I can become it. By practicing this way, you loosen your consciousness. Because remember, we are not this limited thing, we are everything. I can actually become another person. Feel their emotions and do the process for them, and they will change. People don't often think about that. I think they're interfering, or they're interfering with somebody's choice, or they're manipulating. What are you doing anyway? Your thoughts are holding everybody around you in place. We are all one. We all have impact on each other. You simply choose to have a positive impact. I can heal a person if I choose to, even if they don't ask. They're part of my reality. I can choose to have a happy person there rather than a miserable person, can't I? And this is a very interesting exercise, because when you grok a person, it completely changes how you see them, because quite often we have an opinion of a person. I might be thinking I need to change that person because they're an arsehole. When I come and realise, no, their identity isn't an arsehole, that's not how they see themselves. This is the identity that needs to change, yes. It won't be what I think it is. It's actually a very positive process to grok people and do the process for them so they change, because you change as well. There's a reason why they're irritating you, why you're not happy with what they're doing. It's touching on your emotions, and we change together. Another way is what they call the Ho'oponopono. It's part of the principle in Hawaii, the old kahuna ways. You simply release in yourself what you see in another person, and they'll change too. We do this all the time in the point holding, because when you're pressing points on each other, you realize you're sharing something. One person changes, other people change, you've got the similar pattern, because you're actually in it together. The reason somebody's bothering me is because I have a similar emotion that's being triggered. When I release that, we both change. I can do it from either point of view. I can do it from my point of view. I can do it from their point of view, because really we're one. I can look at how this other person's making me feel and release that, and it changes them. Or I can step into them and feel their emotion and change it from their point of view. And in the end, it's all the same. See, when you actually start doing this, it completely changes your perspective of how you see people here. You have so many rules saying, I can't do this if they don't have their permission. Well, why not? You're your creation, you're one. You'll completely change how you do things when you start doing this, because you see, you begin to wake up to reality, a real connection. It's not manipulative, it's not harmful, it's simply we're all growing together. If I grow, I'm going to pull up people up with me, like it or not, because we're connected. I'm not going to stay down to someone else who's choosing not to grow. No, they're going to grow.
And gawking, is gawking something worth doing a practical workshop on? I mean, I know it's essentially a simple process, but quite difficult to do, no?
You could do, but once I've told you how to do it, it's really a case of going and doing it. It's like I could do a workshop and all you'd just be walking around all day gawking things. You could do that at home once I've told you how. It's worth having a bit of time, making some space one day. If you do a few minutes, it's fine, but maybe spend one day doing it for several hours, then you'll really learn it just by having that experience. Go around gawking different things, start off the objects, which are obvious, go into living things like trees and plants, into more subtle things like the air, the earth itself, the sun, become sound, different noises you hear, you can become anything. And it's a very expensive process to actually become different things other than what you think you are. And then you start doing people. Not only do you actually become them physically, you begin to feel their emotions. You feel their identity. And this is useful because you realize then your identity isn't real either. Becoming you one moment and somebody else the next moment makes your own identities less real. You know you can step out of them. And makes change easier. So it's a very useful exercise, and it's simple. You just do it to go out and become something else for a while. It just takes a minute to start feeling your boundaries as different, being this other thing. And the more you do it, the easier it gets, and the more wonderful things you can do with it. You can become anything.
If we do have an article, we'll get that put in the chat for you, Gayatri. But Lynn is asking, so when you grok, how do you ungrok something?
You step back into being yourself. Simple. You're so familiar with being yourself, it's easy. It won't be hard. If I'm being at this table and suddenly I'm going to be me again, I know what me looks like. It's so easy to come back to it. There's no problem. I've been me most of my life, you know.
Brilliant, Nick. Nick's going to try and grok a dog because a dog seems to have a great time. I do not want to grok this puppy. Okay, so let's move on to...
You can grok anything. That's the interesting thing when you grok things is there's no judgment. Like when I was learning, my teacher told me to grok this dog turd that was lying there. When you actually permit, it's no judgment. Oh, it just is. It's who it feels. It'd be a turd. And so the judgment goes where you see.
And there was what until you say that, Peter. This is what it feels like to be a turd. Right. Okay.
Well, it's actually really useful because then you know when you're not a turd as well, so people can't tell you that.
Then you know when you're not being a shit. Right, okay, let's move on. Yeah, next exactly, question. Decades ago, composure. Decades ago, I made a decision to stay in a relationship that did not bring me joy. Sorry about that. I'll start again.
He agrees here. <He's been there.
laughs> Oh gosh, it's all gone doolally, hasn't it? Right, let's go back. Yeah. Decades ago, I made a decision to stay in a relationship that did not bring me joy out of fear of poverty and being a single mum. I now know that I should have chosen differently. The relationship ended 20 years ago and the person has transitioned. But how do I go back to that decision to revise it?
It's probably an older decision why you made that. This goes back to the fundamental decision I made. Avoiding pain rather than seeking joy. You know, you stood out of security, avoid poverty, avoiding something rather than going for something. So you have to go back even earlier to see what's behind that. It's that fundamental choice. We decide life is about seeking, about avoiding something bad rather than going for something good. That's the difference. If you change the older choice first, then that one becomes more obvious. If you go back to that again, you could make a different choice. You'd know that, you know. You see, the choice made there was a very individual one. It wasn't the profound choice behind it. You chose at that moment to stay with the person. But if you really look, the underlying choice below that is because you've chosen to actually avoid the pain rather than go for the joy. That's why you fit into that choice so easily.
Do we make the new choice even before we lifted the old choice and just wait for the new choice to eventually take its place when the emotion's clear? Oh, that's a good one.
It happens instantly when the emotion choice happens. That is, it's not just the emotion, that, I mean, that's releasing any once you're feeling it. It's the choice you made in that emotion that we're dealing with here. Once you recognize the emotion and feel the choice, you're just making a new choice and it's done.
Well, I'm going to challenge that.
I just want to say the choice had power because of the emotion it was in. If I'm in pain and I remember that choice to not feel anymore, okay, it's powerful. I can feel myself shutting that feeling away. If instead, well, at least we have to think, okay, what choice would we make instead when I'm in pain? Let's find a better way out of it. Rather than actually avoid the pain, I'm going to avoid the actual trauma that's causing it and run away from this person or go to something else or find another way of dealing with it. You know, you have to think about sometimes what the positive choice would be to replace that. It can be difficult at the time. So you need emotion, you can't think of anything else. When you've been through enough emotion, you'll have clarity to think there could be a different choice here. Shutting off my pain, not feeling, isn't the best way of dealing with the situation. If I'm being beaten, for instance, what am I going to do? At that time, it seemed the most sensible thing not to feel. But you could make a choice to actually go out and reach for help.
So I can think of a number of choices that I have made repeatedly. Mm-hmm. And because you say you make the choice and it's simple and it's done. Well, it's not.
Probably you haven't gone to the original choice, you see. If you keep repeating it, it's because of something earlier that's backing this all up. It's the first choice you want to get to when in emotion. Probably when you're a child in this pain, we have to make a choice out to stop you going crazy. That's the moment you want to get to. Mm. If it keeps happening, it's the same choice. You haven't changed the original one.
Mm-hmm. Let me just check to see if we've got any responses from that. I like the fact that Okay, cool. So let's go to the next question then. Thank you very much. Do our lower selves affect our mind through negative desires and thoughts that are not ours, but we identify it as being part of us that can then affect our health, wealth, magical energy, etc., or contaminate our energy in some way?
Okay, now what are you calling a lower self? This we've got to actually get clarity on, because the lower self, in the Huna, we see the three selves. The lower self is actually the animal self, the Uniyapili. It's the instinctive, it's not negative. It's the survival part, which it acts instinctively. You have the conscious mind, Yuhani, and then you have the Omaku, which is the higher self. There's no lower self which does bad things. No, that's not part of who you are. That can come from the wounded child, it can come from the adolescent, it can come from the ego. It's not really lower self. So it's first of all good to identify where it's coming from. If it's ego, because it's always avoiding things by promising you're better than others and making excuses and so on, you know, deal with the ego. If it's coming from the child, you have to go into the child issues. It's not actually lower self. There's no part of you which wants to seek negativity. What you can deal with then is the child, adolescent, the victim and martyr, the ego. The ego is often a big one there.
Can you grok a part of your body? Someone has a lot of pain in their womb and they want to ask questions.
Oh, yeah, you can go into it. It's not really about questioning because the womb doesn't talk, not verbally anyway. It has emotion. You can put yourself into that womb and feel what it's feeling. Behind that pain, there's other emotions in there too, you'll probably find.
When I was first waking up, it was as if everything, including the wind, wanted to talk to me, and now it has gone, but slowly coming back. Maybe this grokking will help get it back. What about darker entities? Does grokking potentially leave us vulnerable to outside energy attacks in some way? I'm laughing at something else. Sorry.
Yes, it's fine. You're not open by grokking because, you know, you're not actually changing anything. You're becoming more aware of it. It's like, you know, if the dark being's there anyway, blocking it isn't going to do harm. You actually feel more what this dark being's about if you become it. You show no fear. So, you know, if the blocking itself doesn't open you. You can block anything, it's not dangerous. However, you know, if I've got this dark being, I have more understanding of what it's about and less reason to fear because I'll have more information how to deal with it. But yes, you can block the elements, that's certainly up to the rest of it. Block the wind. Not only grok the physical wind, but grok the spirit behind it. We did this on some of my shamanic healing courses. We used to go out and actually when I think I mentioned the fairy course that was recorded there, we'd actually go out and call the elementals and book them. We call them, you know, the gnome, salamander, sylphs, undines from each quarter and grok them. So you actually feel what it's like to be a spirit. When you grok the king of those spirits, you have control of the element. Very useful exercise, yeah. So go out and do as much as you like. Don't just grok physical things, grok more subtle things and grok spirits too. But start with the positive ones. It's not so much fun trying to grok demons and things which are trying to eat you.
And when you grok something, do you take on their diseases?
No, you step straight out of it afterwards. See, when you actually dealing with another person, their disease is based on their emotions and their patterns, what their choice, what they're holding on to. They're not yours. You don't have any attachment to it like the other person has. If I become you and step out of you again, I have no attachment to whatever you are feeling because it's not mine. Unless I've got something similar and going and it'll trigger it, but that's mine. I can then release that. So it's all positive. It'll give you an opportunity to release something. If I have a symptom of some kind because I've grokked you, it's because it's triggered something in me. I'll use that as an opportunity. I'll go into that, release it, and I've healed something. So it's all positive if you did it that way.
What if you grok someone and he has a demon with him?
You'll feel it. Then you stop being him and you won't have that demon. But also, if you grok him further, you'll understand why the demon's there. You get into his emotions and what the weaknesses that let it in. Find everything, there's choices, there's emotions, there's unconsciousness.
Yeah, Gayatri is saying that she would like to grok her brother so that she can understand him because she believes that he is a narcissist. And I suppose it helps with the understanding their perspective on life.
It is. Interesting thing with narcissists, quite often there's something missing in their development. See, normally as you grow, usually about the age, about eight-ish, we actually develop a new brain circuit where we actually understand other people rather than just ourselves. When you're a baby, it's all about you. It grows to a certain point where suddenly your understanding of other people comes in as well. You appreciate their needs. It's not just yours anymore. Some people don't get that. For some reason, there's been a block in their growth. Could even be a nutritional deficiency where that brain circuit didn't develop. They don't have the capacity to understand other people or consider their needs. It just isn't there. When you go into that feel, you'll feel a deficiency, basically. What isn't there? What didn't they get? Why didn't that bit grow? Then you can start to heal it.
And the question is this something that you can heal?
It is. Everything can be healed. It's not an easy one. So quite often the narcissist isn't trying to heal because they've already got this kind of mechanism going where they learn to get what they want. Everything is geared towards getting their needs met and they don't need to consider anybody else. They would never even consider why they would want to. They don't act in a certain way that might seems like they care because it gets what they want. So it's quite a difficult behaviour to spot because they act it's normal act, caring. What happens then suddenly when you realise after all this showing of caring, they make a decision whether they need any more or they don't care at all and you wonder what happened. It's a huge shock. So it could be really difficult to deal with and they don't want to change because they're quite happy with what they're doing. They don't even understand what's missing. They don't have the ability to actually even consider that. However, when you go into and grok them from your perspective, you can actually see there's something missing. Therefore, you can begin to heal that. You go and replace what is missing. It could be a soul loss. Sometimes a soul retrieval might do it. They suddenly start to feel things they didn't feel before, and therefore they understand other people. There was an example. It's actually a physical thing in this case, because there was a kid I had to work on. It was a real horrible kid at school, bullying and hurting everybody. And because he had a lack of nerve supply. He couldn't feel pain, therefore didn't understand why it was bad to hurt other people. We did the STO point, he restored his nerve supply and he felt pain. He stopped it all. Because then he knew what it was like.
So what's the difference? I mean, I know there's a clear difference between grokking and being empathic, but is being empathic like a form of grokking?
It can be. It all depends where your boundaries are. The thing is, when you practice grokking, you're also learning boundary because you're in control. You can step into it, you can step out of it. Mm-hmm. Quite often you're empathic, you haven't made that conscious choice. You kind of get drawn into it all the time. So if you are empathic, grokking is a good way of learning control. You can step into it and step out of it again.
So going over to Nick's comment, she likes the fact that all she has to worry about is feeling. When she started feeling, it felt selfish, but now it feels very calming. Yes. And I often find, Nick, that although all we have to do is feel and welcome, we often forget. That's what we have to
do. It's an interesting one that people think it's selfish, because people often told that when you're being emotionally being indulgent. No, we all feel, you know, it's part of being human. Well, not just human, if the animal feels too. Part of being alive. It's like, say, selfish to be alive.
So that's all the questions that we have at the moment. So if anyone has any, oh, there's one just come through. Yeah, so if anyone's got any questions, then please do let us know in the final few minutes that we have. So next question, it seems likely that about 80% of the world's population will die over the next 1 to 3 years due to the you-know-what. Do you expect that it will be difficult to buy a lot of nutritional supplements and minerals and herbs, etc.? And will we need to rely primarily on locally sourced plants? When one has to deal with a lot of illness, it seems a lot more nutritional support is needed. Will we be able to access all of this as society breaks down?
This is quite a big question, because it's not all this is what they're trying to do. You find already they're trying to ban the supplements that we need, like in acetylcysteine, it's being taken to the market here and there, hard to get hold of. So there are those who are trying to block these things, but the thing is, are you going to let them win? We're trying to wake people up and down to the bigger picture. Well, you're focusing on that, John, just the physical health and your danger. You're missing a bigger picture here. Now, the ones in charge, yeah, they do want to depopulate to a degree. They don't need so many people in the world. They want enough for them to control. What you find people stuck in here is a state of what you call mass formation psychosis. This was masked by the Nazis. They first looked this back in the 20s when they saw the well-educated, intelligent people suddenly going to start making mad, basically. How does it work? First of all, people are put in a state of what they call free-floating anxiety. Everybody's got anxieties, they can't quite place it because life has become kind of crap. This difficulty of paying the bills, all those things that we've been experiencing up till now, it's all preparing people in a state of anxiety. They haven't got a single focus for it, though. They then start distancing people. There's no social activity, no way to expressing it. Everybody's stuck with this anxiety they can't express. All you need is leaders say, you're in pain, I've got an answer to it, and they'll follow them through hell. They get together because now they have a common enemy. Now they think the virus is the cause of all the problems. It wasn't. They had lots of anxiety before. Now they've got focus. This is the enemy. Therefore, they band together, they do everything they can. Therefore, they're willing to actually go without everything else and do what they need to actually fight this virus. And suddenly, anybody who's not part of the program becomes the enemy. It's like a war. That's the mass formation, psychosis. This is what they're doing to create a totalitarian state, basically. Get everybody under control through this mass formation psychosis. So they'll follow their leader, thinking they're getting somewhere because they've got an enemy to fight. That's what has to be broken first. This is what they're going to get people to agree with it in order to follow their state, would actually fight those who are trying to do it naturally and not giving to this virus. They're fighting everybody who is not with their program. How do you do that? You have to return the social status. You have to return the connectedness between people. And people, until people socialize again, they're kept in this state of mass formation psychosis. Of course, the next second best thing, give them the real enemy. It's not the virus that's hurting them, it's the fucking leaders. They first created all the anxiety in the first place. They created all these lockdowns, all the social distancing, everything. They're causing the deaths by giving poisonous vaccines. It's not the virus, it's the enemy. If they know who the real enemy is, that rage will be redirected and they'll make a massive change. But actually, the trouble with that, if you give them a new target, it can still be manipulated. The only way to end it is actually to come back to the proper social status of people, connected to it again. That's what we should be working with. That way we change the world. We're still fighting over one thing. See, first it was a virus, now it's all this is now it's the vaccine, another enemy. Now it's a bigger picture. We need to discreate the whole thing. And you'll do that, you have to go into all the feeling about it. Remember, it's not just the vaccine, it's all that led up to it. What's creating this anxiety in the first place? All the stuff that's led up to this, all the social distancing, all this disconnectedness. Everybody's feeling that. It's a state we're in that we can discreate. If you do it for us, we start doing it for everybody. There's a possibility they could die, but they don't have to, because plants are cleaning them up. So many plants have been found to work already. You know, people have been poisoned by vaccine. They've actually matched the blood again after taking herbs. It's cleaned out the system. Herbs are working. Nature's always got the answer. Life's like that. It always seeks to correct itself. It's very intelligent. What scientists can't come up with, plants will. what's going to take in the end is a massive change of consciousness when people come back to natural medicine again, because the pharmaceutical industry is failing. People will see what it is. That's the kind of side you want to see. The people wake up and get fed up with pharmaceutical industry, don't listen anymore. Then they won't have this bullshit. It only works if people give into it.
Yes, when I was reading the question, likely that 80% of the population will die, my thoughts automatically went to, is that necessary? Like, I don't believe that that would actually need to happen. You know, I think that the evolutionary arms race, like we were talking about earlier, you know.
Mm-hmm. But there's other things coming. Well, first of all, not everybody's got the same vaccine. It's been experimental. It's been found, for instance, there are three different types that have been marked differently. A third of them are just saline solution. So those people are actually safe. They're ones not getting ill. Some are just vaccine, some have got the mRNA technology. So only a third of them actually the really harmful ones. Of course, some are stronger than the others. Like, for instance, the Moderna one has a much higher percentage of this mRNA than say, the Pfizer one. So it's actually doing the damage faster. And yes, it's curable, as I said, by herbs. When people start dying, I'm sure a lot of people who've got the vaccine will now realize they need to do something about it. It can all change. The cures are out there for people. I mean, actually, even with the medical system, things like hydroxychloroquine and the ivermectin work far better than the vaccines against COVID anyway. And things like quercetin, dealing with a spike protein, and acetylcysteine is removing the graphene. So there are plenty of things out there, both natural and synthetic, that can actually help heal the body. But herbs will do it far better.
And Nick is saying that she's worried that even though if we remain in safe communities, we still live in a community and we have to go out there into the wider world.
Yeah, we do. And that's why we need these herbs to protect us as well. If we really have to avoid people, we can't avoid it forever because these spike proteins will spread. That's how it's been made. So even the ones who haven't been injected are going to pick it up from others. So we do have to learn how to clear ourselves. Otherwise, we're all doomed. But that's not what's happening. Plants are changing, but also the virus itself is mutating. It's found the Omicron virus, for instance, has stimulated people's immune systems, created immune reactions, people actually throw off the other variants as well. See how nature adapts itself? Nature is finding its own cure. Nature is so adaptable that whatever they're having horrific things even now that we're all going to die, now it won't, because something's going to change. Nature changes, it tries to survive, it keeps finding new ways of living.
Okay, so we're going to go over back to grokking. Is it also grokking if I record most of what is happening through my hearing and thus get pictures of thoughts and feelings that give me information about what is happening? Or is it simply my form of communication? I can best record...
Yeah, that is a different one. That's not grokking, no, but that is another form of communication, that's fine.
I can best record through my hearing when I stare at a place instead of looking into a person's eyes. It looks strange, but I feel better that way. I'm the same, actually.
Actually, we don't look into people's eyes as much as people think. When you look in the person, quite often you look all over the place. It's interesting how they studied this in animals. Like, for instance, the way an eagle looks at its prey uses what they call middle periphery vision. If you look at something that's moving, you get lost easily. If you're looking at the air in which it occupies, you don't get distracted by its movements. Also, you look at the way the eyes work, you study it. You actually watch people's eyes moving very subtly. Anything you look at, you actually find the eyes moving around this outline. We don't even think about doing that, but that's what we do unconsciously. It happens. We're never really looking straight in the eyes. The eyes tend to do their own thing while the brain's doing its own thing as well. So you have your own mind trying to find a connection, and the eyes do their own thing. You don't actually try and stare anywhere. They just do what they do. You don't have to look them in the eye. Your eyes go where they need to go. Quite often it's a part of an emotional response to look up and down and so on. It's just what certain emotions you go through. It's actually far less a part of the actual communication process than you think. It's not really seeing the person that's doing it. They're just doing one thing while your mind's doing another. You're connecting somewhere.
The eye scanning, is that scanning for fractals?
Not necessarily. I said the eyes do their own thing, and it's quite often not what you think it is. The eyes, when the eyes pick up an image, they tend to go all around your outline. Unless you're short-sighted, of course, the reason why eyes get stuck is because they're not looking around enough, they're not moving enough, the eyes get locked. Normal people, when they're looking, it's like, you know, you look at anything, you're not looking at, you're looking around its outline, the eyes are always shifting around. And then they go out of focus. They go look into this space in which you occupy. When you're actually trying to tune into a person and communicate with them, you're not really looking at them. You're kind of looking in that direction, but actually not directly at them anymore. You're looking at that particular space in which they're existing within.
And I want to go back to Lindy's question. She was talking about the relationship, and she said, thank you for the insight. How do I locate the emotion or the original choice that has led me to make me avoid the pain? Sorry. How do I locate the emotion or the original choice that has led me to make the avoid pain choice repeatedly in life?
It was the beginning time when it happens the first time, the event without ever since, basically. It'd be someone in your childhood where the pain was then you couldn't avoid. You had to find a way of avoiding it, basically. That's the earliest choice. So when you go into the emotion behind it, you go deeper and deeper until you hit that. When you do the meditation, which I suggested in the article, when you go into the forbidden zone, it's there. So because everything you pushed away is there. So what happens when there's something you didn't want to feel? You've pushed it away, we won't see it again. That's why you can't find it. Makes sense, doesn't it? If I was to give something up, and like, for instance, I want to give up chocolate, and I give you lots of chocolate and say, how much I beg you, don't give this to me. Later when I ask for it, you won't give it to me. That's with the emotions. I've told my subconscious, I don't want to see this again. If it won't give it to me. So that's in the forbidden zone. All the stuff that I've told myself I don't want to see again is in there. Because the subconscious works so symbolically, it's not that difficult to find once you accept there is a forbidden zone. You find the forbidden zone, when you go into it, everything you don't want to feel is in there. That's why that meditation is so useful. You step in there, you begin to feel it. You feel everything there you haven't been felt for a long time. Then you can go into the kind of original choice. You remember the memory when it was so painful that you chose not to feel it anymore.
I'm just thinking that meditation would be a good one to do during a point holding session.
Well, yeah, it can be.
And Limerie is asking, what kind of a choice would we make early in life that would lead us to taking on the pain and shame of others repeatedly?
This is usually a contract more than a choice, which is kind of choice in a way, but it's a very specific one. You're trying to win your parents' love or approval of something like that. Therefore, you give them what they want. Quite often, you think you're here to fix them. It's almost like you've been born, the burden's already put on you. Your parents might be going through pain, think, I've had a child, it's to make our life better. So you're born with a burden already. I'm here to make my parents' life better. They put that on you. And you've taken it on. Because the way they're treating you, you think, okay, if I act in a certain way, I'll make them happy. Then it makes my life easy if they're happy. So you make this choice, which is actually a contract. I'm doing this to get my parents' love, to make things better for me. Therefore, I've agreed to actually deal with their pain more than mine. Similar to choice, but contract, you've got to find basically break. Find it, rip it up and burn it, and cut the ties. Because this involves another person. It's not just a choice on your own anymore.
Is it possible to bring the energies? So we're obviously moving on to another topic now. Is it possible to bring the energies of Vaikuntha or Brahmaloka through your psionic ray pattern or crystal? I obviously said that wrong because you had to look at the screen. Yep. Sorry. Okay. Oh, is it possible to bring the energies of these through your psionic ray pattern or crystal and spread it into your room? Have you ever had such experiences or similar ones? And what would you recommend to make this experience better?
I haven't done those ones, but it's really doable. I mean, remember when you actually create a ray pattern, you'd actually first have to tune to the Creator Servitor. I've done this out of some of the pujas I've done, like for instance, I create a Chandipath talisman. Chandipath is like a long chant to Kali, which takes about an hour to do, but it's the whole story about Kali defeating all the demons. It has a really special power to clearing negativity. So I kind of anchored that into a talisman. If I put that into the chart now, the energy's around you all the time and you feel it. It clears all the negativity and it feels great. So all these things are possible. I haven't done it with Brahmaloka, but you could do it. You simply have to actually do the meditations on that place and kind of anchor it to a pattern. Then you can stick it on your chart and see how it feels.
Okay. I was just about to say that's it, but we've got one more come through. So I've read that the vaccine has made way for them to adapt laws for GMO foods, as they will be able to produce more food to feed the world. Maybe they should use the millions of government money used to support big tech to feed the world. Do we just use keep the Sri Yantra?
You need that, yes, but obviously we need to look at the bigger picture again, because it's like the whole thing about GMs is still going along with our natural medicine. We want to return people to nature, basically. When we get rid of all this crap, we want people to come back to natural medicine and organic farming. That's the way it's going to get to the root of our health problems, you know. And that's the opportunity for that change now, because people are losing trust in the pharmaceuticals and losing trust in the big industry because of what they're doing. So hopefully we get to a point where we can kick out all the GMOs as well as the pharmaceuticals, get those under control. In the meantime, yes, you need this re-entra. That'll actually heal the DNA.
Okay, and then one final question that's come through from Miriam regarding that her sacroiliac, sorry, I don't know how to say that, joints keep locking up, and her pelvis keeps twisting out, and she hasn't been able to walk very much. Questions come through and just knock that up. She hasn't been able to walk very much. Do you know what points she can hold and how to untwist it?
If you see her later for the healing trauma, that's when she do all the right runes. But basically, we can use the right runes at that point. Sacroiliac joint is generally on the bladder meridian, which is about releasing emotion, expressing. This typical thing of childhood choices where you didn't express yourself because your parents' choices came first. Almost like your expression became unimportant. They didn't want to hear it. Therefore, you learned not to express your real feelings. Your expression's being controlled by what your parents expect of you. Or else it's judged. You're trying to express yourself and they say this is all wrong and you get all this judgment on it and you feel bad about it. That's the kind of thing that blocked the bladder meridian. So bladder meridian, I work with the Vato rune. The R. That's the one which the poem says, when Foster flies, an arrow flies into the crowd, and no matter what threatens, I block its force by holding it from the look of my eyes. Get a bit of discriminate of these thoughts, seeing that your parents' thoughts are like the poisoned arrows that got into them spread. No, their thoughts are wrong. You can shut them out. So yeah, I'd work on the bladder meridian for that and go into those kind of negative condition of your parents which stopped your expression.
And as part of the... Sorry, Peter, go on.
I was also going to add that the lower back is about support. It goes along with it. Your parents are controlling you rather than supporting you. If you lack of support in the lower back. But it comes back to the same thing. It's all bladder meridian. All those emotions and, you know, about your expression being stifled by your parents, not being nurtured.
And as part of the workshop that we're going to be going into on the hour, Peter will be going into the runes, and also will be sharing with you Peter's rune handbook. So that all is part of it. And that is all of the questions for today. So the link is in the chat. If you would like to join us on the workshop that we will be starting in approximately 40 minutes, Magically Healing Trauma. If you are not part of the membership, it doesn't matter. You can buy this as a one-off where you will learn how to use the runes, and we will be releasing trauma in a way that no psychology can assist us with in today's world. Thank you very much, everyone. Thank you, Peter.
Well, the thought that people sent the handbook already, the rune handbook, because it needs to be printed out. If you look at it, it's actually a printable version. The kind of when you print it out, do the pages fit in the right order? So okay. Just make sure you print it out beforehand. It'll
wonderful.
Make no sense then.
Okay. If you have a printer. So if you don't have a printer, just trust. Yeah. Trust that everything will work.
It's all in there somewhere. Just be a funny order.
Okay, so wonderful. Yes, do please come and join us. And for those of you who are a student of Peter's, if you've purchased any course in the past, then you're very welcome to join us tomorrow. And please do note that the call for tomorrow, the private students Q&A call, is at the normal time, which is 10 o'clock UK time. So we're reverting back. We wanted to accommodate our US folk, our US participants today. So we will be doing this every 3 months where we'll just have a later call. But as I said, tomorrow, back to the normal time, 10 a.m. UK time for the students. And what are we talking about tomorrow, Peter?
It's going further with the topic of choice, profound choice, threading the needle.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
It's not really about needles, but you'll understand that later.
The element of surprise. Wonderful. Yep. So please, everyone, if you have any questions in the meantime, please find us in MeWe. Happy New Year. We haven't said that,
yes.
Have we?
Happy New Year, everybody.
Yes. Happy New Year. And we will speak to you all very, very soon. So thank you very much, everyone. Take care.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.